Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. Welcome to episode 24. Today I'm speaking with Al Lane. I met Al a couple years ago when I took part in a blog challenge to post every day on one topic for a month. Al wrote hilarious post-apocalyptic zombie haikus while I wrote about mythical beasts. Welcome, Al.
Hello.
So where exactly do you live?
I'm in Nottingham, in England.
Oh, great. And I see your tagline is writer, poet, and daydreamer. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your writing life?
I came to writing fairly late, I guess. I had a vague idea to write a book, in inverted commas, when I was younger. I think that kind of romantic idea of the writer's life that, you know, appeals to a lot of people before you actually look into the hard work and the less fun element of it. Yeah. That kind of appealed to me from a young age, but I did nothing with it. So I just got a career. I work in local government, not a particularly creative job, but, you know, reasonably well paid and kind of, you know, puts a roof on the head and all the rest of it. So just kind of going along with the career. And then my first son was born in 2009. And I wanted to be a kind of an active dad. And, so changing nap is all well and good. And, you know, I got stuck in with that. But I wanted something that was kind of my thing with him. So I kind of took over the story time bit with him a little bit, I guess. You know, my wife did it sometimes as well, but I kind of elbowed her out of the way most of the time, to be honest, because I like doing it. Yeah. And reading him those books from a really early age, all those rhyming picture books from people like Julia Donaldson, so all the Gruffalo and things like that. And I just really got into it. And he really enjoyed that time with me, and he enjoyed the stories as well, and became. He's an amazing reader now. He reads Harry Potter in a couple of days, which is something
fantastic.
I still can't do. But yeah, he's only how old is he now? Eight. So fantastic. Eight, nine. So he's an amazing reader, and I think part of that comes from that kind of early exposure to reading. But anyway, so it impacted on him, but also impacted on me. So I kind of got into the rhythms of those picture books, and you know. A children's picture book is only 500 words or so, and you think, oh, you know, how hard can it be just to write a 500 word story? Yeah. So I got into trying to write my own picture books, and I joined the Scooby Collective. They've got branches all over the world. So that's the Society for Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And joined a critique group through them, and got, you know, quite serious about trying to write some of these children's books. And but the thing they don't tell you about writing rhyming children's picture books, and I think if anyone has children, that they've probably tempted to have a go at least writing one for their own kids at some point, is to get a really good rhyming picture book that's got a regular rhythm and everything to it. It takes an awful lot of work, and I'm up to draft 100, I think, on an original story. And, you know, I got to a point with it with them where I kind of got a little bit frustrated, because I'm a creative person. I enjoy that sort of creative outpouring. Mm-hmm. Those people who get published writing children's picture books, they're either famous or they are stubborn as hell. I'm not
true,
famous, and I'm not stubborn enough. So it was a good grounding and a good sort of experience of getting into writing and sort of a form of poetry, also in terms of critique work, to share your work with others, get that feedback, to, you know, not take it personally, but to understand which bits of that critique is useful to you, and which bits, you know, it's just someone's opinion, which may be different from yours. And, you know, it's a valid opinion, but you don't have to agree with it. So I think in terms of like a writing experience, and you'll never find a friendlier bunch of people, I don't think, than children's picture book writers. You know, no one goes into that as a cold, hard cynic. You know, they're all lovely people writing for the best reasons, to entertain, or because they've got kids of their own and they've kind of got hooked on the same bug that I did. Or they just have this passion, I guess, for trying to reduce stories down to the simplest form. So yeah, I'd recommend that to anyone. You know, sort of test the waters. If you can find a local writing group like that, just go for it. And yeah, so from that the children's picture book stuff, I started blogging. I started writing poems for children, and then I guess from that it just broadened out into poems for adults. Some poems for adults, I'd say, in inverted commas, because it's still quite childish humor, because it's still me. With the blog, that was kind of taking off a little bit a couple of years ago, and I got absolutely hooked on haiku for a while there. Uh-huh. So I there were lots of weekly haiku challenges. So people would put a prompt word or two, and you'd have to include it in a haiku. And I got absolutely obsessed with that. I think in a year, I did work it out at one point, I probably wrote over 500 haiku.
Oh.
They're short, you know, so it's...
Well, but they're hard, because there's a lot that goes into a haiku.
Well, there is, and I think part of the reason I loved it is they're short, they're very satisfying if you get it, but it's almost like doing a Sudoku number puzzle. So if you can get all the pieces to fit together just right, then, you know, it can work really well. And I kind of challenged myself as to how much can you convey in a haiku. So for people who don't know, I mean, the traditional haiku is sort of five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. So just three lines to express things. And, you know, there's a lot of poet friends of mine who are a bit more expressive, who just think that's absolute madness to try and put anything into three lines. But I got so obsessed with it. There was a writing challenge with five words as their weekly prompt, and I set myself the task of incorporating all five words into a meaningful haiku. So if you think with like 575 syllables, that obviously doesn't give you a lot of words to play with.
No.
But yeah, so when that worked, the feeling of that.
Yeah, that would be pretty exciting. Yeah. And then the thing is, your haikus make sense too. Like I could throw five words together, but they wouldn't make any sense. Yours make sense.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess so. But if you wrote 500 short stories, or, you know, 500 chapters or anything, the more you do something, the better you get at it. And I guess I went from that to the haiku, that monthly poem a day challenge. And it's the A to Z challenge. It wasn't even the poem challenge.
Oh, that was it. The A to Z challenge. I forgot the name, right?
Yeah. So I'd like a lot of things, I think I saw advertised maybe a week before, and looked at it and thought, yeah, I can do that. That'll be a good idea. Not having any idea of how much work that would be or any sense of planning. I'd sort of signed up for it, and then it was like, oh well, I need a theme. What can I do as a theme? And then I thought, I'm doing all these haiku. I'm really into that at the moment. What can I do around haiku? I know. I'll do, obviously, survive in the zombie apocalypse. That'll why not? Because that's how my brain works. And then because there's no filter there. I just went, oh yeah, we'll run with that. So I started the challenge. I think maybe the day before it started, I wrote maybe the A's, B's, and C's. But then that was it. Every day I was just writing them on the day.
Oh, that is brutal.
Maybe getting a couple ahead at the weekends, and I did it because it made me laugh, and
made a lot of other people laugh. They were incredible.
Yeah, thank you. But that was the only reason I started. It wasn't because I thought this would be popular, or you know, that there's a mass audience out there for this. Because, funnily enough, I'd never seen anyone do it before, so I had no idea if there was an audience for it. but it entertained me, so I thought I will do this and we'll have some fun with it. And then even within the challenge, to mix things up on a few days, I wrote some poems in there as well. So I remember there was one day I did a version of what's the David Bowie song? Something and Super Creeps. But I did a version of that with Sexy Zombies and Super Creeps.
yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
So I probably shouldn't have published it. I hope David Bowie's lawyers aren't listening. But it was just something I did for fun and just to break up, I guess, doing haiku all the time. Because one thing I'm conscious of, and I've got two self-published collections out now. One thing I don't want to do is to bore the reader. So the first one that I self-published, I literally self-published through a local publishing company. It's not available online or anything. The copies in the box by my feet are the only sort of copies available in the world. But I sort of did that just for me and to sell performing at gigs. And mm-hmm. in there, that there's a mix of flash fiction. There's some serious poems. There's some poems that are a lot less serious. There's some silly jokes about wearing mankinis or living as a zombie or the attractiveness of my cat, shall I put it in?
You told me about that one already, yeah.
yeah, that was before we were on air. So, in there, I think if someone read that, they would have a good idea of the state of my mind and they would probably say, Al, just put an arm around me and go, Al, are you okay? but it's a happy collection. And one thing that I don't really like writing so much are things that are depressing or that come from a dark place or that are overly personal. And I know other people do like writing those things and do them very well and find them very cathartic. But for me, I sort of go the other way. And it's like I'd rather entertain and find some common ground. Because I think those are the things that have a greater impact. If you can actually entertain someone and still make them think at the same time, then it's like actually you're sort of slipping that thought in under the radar. And sometimes it has a greater impact because they're not expecting the twist at the end
or
the emotion that mm-hmm. comes through the humor. Yeah. So, it is a fine balance sometimes, and some just go too far. In writing and in a lot of things in life, you've just got to trust yourself and allow yourself that freedom to goof about, to try things, to make mistakes, and just see what works for you. And the haiku stuff that really worked for me for that year of my life. And to be honest, after that year, I kind of forced myself into a cold turkey. Because it was getting ridiculous, and in terms of broadening out my writing and what I was doing, so I got more interested in trying to actually go and perform poetry, and performing haiku is a challenge. I've ended up writing a sort of handful of haiku that are really just one line jokes. So if in fact, I do that now. If I listen to a one-line comedian, someone like Steve Wright or someone like that, mm-hmm. there's a lot of his jokes. You can actually just take them and adapt them slightly to put them in 5-7-5 format. Mm-hmm. So again, that's another little. I like these little challenges for myself. So I take one-line jokes and see if I can convert it into haiku, and then I use some of those in my live set, but. But I've also had to sort of broaden out my style, I guess, into writing less rhyming verse poetry. And as I said, starting off with the children's rhyming picture books, I guess that is my default, is to always go to a sort of as hopefully humorous, regular rhyming style. I've kind of broadened out into more prose poetry, more flash fiction. I wrote my first screenplay for a sitcom last year. I just like trying different things and just seeing how they fit in with other things, and just running with them for a while.
So
I mean, this Sorry, go on.
What was the first book called that you don't, that you know, for you take to gigs?
It's called The Lane Less. When I get organized, and organization is not a strong point, but when I do, it's called The Lane Less Traveled. Idea that I had was to, because I've got, you know, I've got a surname that lends itself to these kind of weak puns. So I had an idea to do a whole series of books that would change, wherever you've got road or pathway in the title, to just change it to lane. And then, you know, every book would have my name somewhere in the title with a series of increasingly weak puns as I've run out of material.
I love it. And your second book is called?
The second book is Haiku of the Dead. And that is available on Amazon. I was a little bit more organized with that one. And with that one, because I think the first one is just a sort of a collection with no theme. So there are, in The Laneless Traveled, there are five chapters in there broadly around love and relationships and working in an office and family and so on. Mm-hmm. But there's no sort of overarching theme to it. It's just the ramblings of a madman sort of collected together. So Haiku of the Dead, it's still ramblings of a madman, but it's on a common theme. So with that one, for example, last November, I took a day off work. I literally took copies around all the bookstores in Nottingham, asking if they'd be interested in selling in store. That was a very sobering day. I got a lot of rejections that day. I did also get a yes. There's a local independent record shop called Rough Trade who agreed to stock it. They've got a few branches around the world. They've got a store in London, I know. I think Nottingham's the only place they have a store in this country outside London. But in terms of sort of indie cool, that was a very big tick in the box for me, that the fact that they agreed to take that. So yeah, that's the other thing about putting yourself out there, is people are going to say no, and rejection, yes, as an author, you know, in any sense, it is hard to take. But when you get one of those little yeses, you forget all the other stuff. So it's, yeah, so
that's so true.
Yeah, so there was a lot of shoe leather that day. But one of the other things I did was to take the book to there's a local magazine around the arts and what's going on in Nottingham called The Left Lion. So I took a copy to their office, asking if they would review it in their magazine for me. And also there's a local magazine where I live called The Beastonian. So I dropped a copy off for their editor to review it as well. And what I didn't know at the time was that the editor on that also works on the City of Literature team at Nottingham. Mm. So he's not just an editor of a local magazine, but he's also sort of more influential in the local literature scene. And I was supposed to meet with him this week to do an interview. Mm. Unfortunately, he was ill, so we've rescheduled. But they're going to make me their new writer of the month, or sort of emerging writer.
So,
yeah, and this was not something that I'd thought, but this came from putting myself out there. And
right.
So, you know, that is top writing tip to anyone, is just whatever your genre, whatever field you're in, just go and try things. And as I said, it was a lot of shoe leather that day. I went to a lot of places. I've not even heard back from Left Lion. So, I don't know if they're going to review it or not at this stage. I hope so, not chase them up, but I don't know. So you get a lot of don't knows, you get some rejections, but then you also get other things sparking off it that could take you in a completely different direction. So who knows?
That's a good tip. Could you read us one of your poems?
Yeah, sure. Do you want some haiku or a longer one?
How about, could we have one of each?
Yeah, sure.
Or some of each.
there's one I do called Zombie Life. I'm just going to have a little sip of water before I do it, because
absolutely.
I try and do it in zombie voice, and I've done it live before, and literally been coughing and dying on stage halfway through. And the first time I performed it, I tried to memorize it as well, that's sort of a new step for me. I've tended to read off things. So I know the words that are there, but I've got the words in front of me as a safety blanket, if nothing else. But I tried to memorize this one and do it without the book or anything with me. And just, I blanked on stage. And but I made a joke of it and went with it. And people were joking about corpsing, but I was up on stage as a zombie. So it all kind of worked out, really.
Yeah, but that's it's a good theme for that. So I didn't realize that there's a zombie voice.
Well, again, this just comes from trying different things. So to promote Haiku of the Dead, I did a short video for YouTube to promote it. And this wasn't planned. It literally was Halloween. And I was dressed up with my boys. So I asked my wife to help me a bit with the zombie makeup and had some zombie blood on the head and everything. And I just thought, while I've got the makeup on, I'm going to record a few videos. And so I recorded three or four of my poems just for myself, and I will put these on YouTube eventually, but haven't done it yet. But I also did a sort of promo video for Haiku of the Dead, and I did it unscripted. I was just sort of mucking about, pretending to be a zombie, advertising this book, actually telling people not to buy it because the book is about how to survive, and you know, that's no good for zombies. They want to go and eat people.
That's right. You're the food.
from having the makeup and thinking, oh yeah, I'll just record a video. That'll be fine. From that, I suppose I've got an emerging zombie voice, which is just a bit gruff and a little bit cockney. But yeah, again, not planned, but you know, you try things and some work and some stick and some don't. And what I need to do now is to work out, because I'm developing a zombie show at the moment, I need to work out how to incorporate the zombie character into the show without having to talk in this voice for the whole show.
Right.
Because I just physically I wouldn't be able to do it. So we're almost back to that, you know, you've got five words and a haiku to fit them in. You know, it's like, you've got to take a common sense approach at some point and stop challenging yourself with these stupid things.
But that's the fun part, is challenging. I remember reading stories to kids and trying to make a witch voice, and my voice would give out really quickly. It's hard to keep in voice.
It is, yeah, yeah.
So we're running low on time here. So if
Yep. So this is Zombie Life. I was born a bonny zombie baby. It's the only life I've known. But years and moons have passed since then. How I've zombie grown. Growing up sure ain't easy. Juicy brains don't come for free. And there's no chance those screaming humans will ever let me be. See, I've never craved attention. I just want an axe-free life. Somewhere peaceful in the country, where I can find a loving, kind, decaying wife. I never knew my zombie father. Spent no childhood catching ball. No mother there to catch me when rotting limbs would fall. And I don't know if you've noticed, but zombie role models are lacking. We're just used in films to show off the hero's muscles as they're hacking. And don't you see the irony in claiming we love brains, then trying to bash our heads in? It's prejudice ingrained. I don't want to fight you. Set aside your sword. Quit swinging that bloody baseball bat. Let's sit and have a word. I know my tongue's necrotic, but there's a message neath my growling. If only you would listen, really listen, we could end this midnight prowling. Our demands are very few, just leave us all alone. In basements, malls, or graveyards, where we can rot and roam. We're the next step in evolution. These are Darwinian growing pains. We don't want to harm you. We just want to eat your brains.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Thank you. I do love that poem more than I should, but it is really hard on the throat.
It is fantastic. And the last line, we just want to eat your brains. That is so, you know, it just hits you in the stomach. It's good.
And then in the haiku of the dead, they are mostly haiku in there. As with everything, there's a couple of poems in there just to break things up. But so there's a mix of sort of serious advice like take up gardening. Growing juicy things to eat may just save your life. Look after yourself. Keep to a healthy diet. Eat up all your greens. Dispose of food waste. To discourage rats and pests, burn all your garbage. So, you know, you can treat it as a serious thing on, you know, surviving the apocalypse, because these are serious things. And then there are things in there that are just for fun. So flamethrowers are cool. Sadly, completely useless against the undead. And there's, hang on, there's one in here that I will share. It's a friend of mine. This is her favorite one. my guilty pleasure. Watching joggers get eaten in day one attacks. But that one comes from the heart. So when down by the lake, hunting, fishing, keep your wits. Zombie ducks don't quack.
Ooh, that's chilling, that one. Yeah. I love your poetry, Al. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to have to pull this to an end. And I wish you every luck with your poetry. I will put all the links on the show notes for those who are listening, so you can find Al's poetry. And he writes a regular blog, and there's new stuff coming out all the time. And I think you're brilliant.
Thank you very much. There will be some non-zombie material on there in the future as well, but I can't promise how much.
they tend to creep in, do they?
They do, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, and bye for now.
Thank you very much.
I'm talking with Mark O'Neill. Mark is a British award-winning fiction author now living in Würzburg, Germany. I'm not sure I said that right. He's the creator of the acclaimed Department 89 spy thriller series and the Scorpion novels. In 2018, he won Bookworks Book of the Week and the Reader's Choice Awards. His book Operation Eternal Vengeance is nominated for this year's Reader's Choice Awards. Welcome, Mark.
Welcome.
Tell me about you and your life, and your writing life.
Oh, me and my writing life. First of all, I'm British. I am living in Germany with my German wife. During the day, to pay the bills, I am a professional writer for clients, you know, doing things like copywriting and so on, and tech journalism. And now, in part-time, I am writing fiction novels. So I'm hoping that one day I can do the fiction novels full time that will pay the bills.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
It would, yes.
Yeah, I notice you have editing services listed on your website. So you're a copywriter and an editor. And
yes.
Anything
that pays the bills.
Yeah, that sounds good. So what, I see some of your books are spy thrillers. What fascinates you about the world of thriller writing?
Well, at the moment, they're all spy thrillers, because that's the genre that I've chosen to write in at the moment. First of all, I just think that it's one of the easier topics to break into. When you look at the movies these days, a lot of the movies are focused around this particular genre. And so people like that sort of thing. They like to watch, you know, gunfights, explosions, action, adventure. And so that's the kind of book that I think people like to read. And so it's also a genre that I think that people can easily break into. And as far as writing a series about German military intelligence, that's partly because I live in Germany, and also partly because I think that there aren't really many books about intelligence services outside of the United States and United Kingdom.
Yeah,
a lot of the intelligence services in other countries get ignored.
I love thrillers. I like that on the edge of your seat feeling when you're following a story along. I don't know that I agree with you that they're easy to write. I tried. I was writing romantic suspense, and I tried to hit the thriller level. And you have to have a lot at stake, and you have to really drive the plot hard. And I think it's a special skill.
Well, I think that if you watch a lot of movies and TV shows and you listen closely to the dialogue in these shows, and then eventually you can start to pick up what works and what doesn't work. So I don't think it's. I mean, I would say that romance is probably the most difficult genre to write. You know, I mean, I could never write a romance book. So I think everybody's just different. You know, everybody's got their own niche that they can easily fall into.
I think you're right. So you're living in Germany. Do you think it's different writing there than writing anywhere else?
I don't see why. I mean, we're all on the internet. We're all one big community online, and as long as you have a computer and you have an online connection, I don't really think these days that it matters where you are in the world, does it?
No, we're like one big happy family. Like a writer, I find I instantly relate to other writers wherever they are because we have the same hopes and dreams and the same journey.
Despite what people might say about Amazon, I mean, they have kind of made it much easier for people to get stuff published, and they've kind of leveled the playing field an awful lot. I mean, in the past, obviously, it was extremely difficult to get a publisher to notice you, but now anybody can publish anything. I mean, there's good sides and bad sides to that, but at least, you know, everybody can become an author if they want to.
Yeah, it's exciting times. We have so many more opportunities. I agree. Do you belong to a local writing group?
Not a local one, no. I mean, I belong to a lot of online groups, a lot of Facebook groups. There's also an independent authors association that I belong to. So they're all online, but not locally, no.
And do you publish exclusively on Amazon, or did you go wide, or...?
Well, I started exclusively on Amazon, but I'm sure you know yourself that there's a lot of problems with Kindle Unlimited, people manipulating the page reads and people with their dirty tricks trying to get more money out of Amazon and so on. And so I realized pretty soon that probably I was not making as much as what I could. And so I decided that I was going to start to go wide instead. So I put my books on other platforms using Draft2Digital, I'm starting very slowly to get an income through places like Apple Books and Kobo and Nook and all these places. And now that Walmart is carrying, is it Kobo Books
it's
now that
Kobo.
They're carrying?
Yep. It's, yeah.
Right. So now it's even better now if you're on Kobo, because you know now you're into the Walmart market. So, you know, there's so many more people out there now that can probably buy your books.
And what are you currently working on?
At the moment, I am working on the next Department 89 book. That's my spy thriller series. So I'm working on that, and I'm hoping to get it out in the next couple of months.
And what number is this in the series?
Oh, good question. let's see. I think it's number 10.
Number 10. Wow. So you have one main character that's driving this series?
Being a government department, there are several people in this fictional department. So it's not just one person. That's the good thing about making something like this, is that you can make up multiple people and you can have different people running different stories. And so it doesn't always depend on one person. I mean, in the last book, I killed off several people because I got bored with them. So
I like that. I like it when an author doesn't hesitate to kill people off, because it's just ridiculous that people keep getting in these dangerous situations and some of them don't die.
Yeah, well, eventually I just thought to myself, you know, I really hate this person. I don't want to write this person anymore. So I'm just going to give them a heroic death, and then they get sent off to the the big home in the sky, and they'll get we'll get somebody else in, you know, somebody new, somebody unique, somebody that everybody's going to love again,
and no conflicts,
and everybody can sort of either tell me they like the person or hate the person. And you know, that's a good thing about being an author, is that you can just, you know, kill people off whenever you want and bring new people in whenever you want. It makes you feel a bit like God, you know. You can just...
Well, I like working in fantasy because I can bring them alive again too.
Yeah, that's the fun about thrillers. You can't bring them back to life.
No, it's a one-way street. So what book do you want me to feature in your show notes?
Let me see. Well, probably the first one, because obviously if the first one gets promoted and everybody wants to read the rest, I hope. So that would be The Renegade Spy.
The Renegade Spy. And can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, this is a prequel to the rest of the series, and it introduces the main character, Sophie Decker, who is the female chief of the department. And it explains how the department got started, and it explains some of the other characters, and it also explains an incident that happened that got her the job in the first place. So it kind of sets the whole thing up and gives people an introduction to the series.
Oh, that sounds like a really good introduction. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Oh, okay, I'm having a quick look at my bedside table here. I've got like stacks and stacks of books here, which is probably a writer's curse.
Yes.
I'm actually reading A Thousand Years of Solitude.
Oh, I love that book.
Yes, I'm nearly finished it. I've got about like 10 pages left to go, so don't tell me the ending, please.
How can a book like that end, right? Yeah,
exactly. I love that book. And yeah, there's also lots of history books sitting here. I love to read history, so lots of history books. And I've got a Charles Dickens here that I'm thinking about starting soon. So, you know, I've got like hundreds of books sitting in my office that I haven't read yet. And I always have a problem deciding which one I'm going to read next. That's the problem.
Yeah, I'm an eclectic reader too. So which Dickens is it?
Great Expectations.
Oh, that's a good one too. So do you have a final word for us?
A final word?
Something to inspire the writers out there.
To inspire the writers. As Ernest Hemingway said, write drunk and edit sober.
That's a good one. That's a very good one.
And that's my mantra. I have it on my website. I have it on my Facebook page. It's everywhere. I love it.
And so where can we find you and your books?
If you go to markoneil.org, there are links there to everything. My Amazon page, my social media, everything. So markoneil.org.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Mark. I really appreciate you talking to us today. It's so refreshing to hear somebody from a different country having the same joys of in writing and the same problems.
It's nice to talk to you too.
Okay, and that's a wrap. Thank you for listening to our episode today. You can leave me feedback on my podcast website, www.bloodsweatandwords.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter. I wish you a wonderful day of writing or reading or whatever your passion is. See you between the lines.